You're listening to Feathers, a podcast of stories about God speaking and his people having just enough faith to believe him and obey. I hope these stories inspire you and encourage you to take flight in your own faith. I'm your host, Amy Bennett, and this is season 4, episode 9. Well, hey guys, and welcome to Feathers this week. I'm so excited that you're here. This week, I want to start off and say a special thank you to the people who shared last week's post on Facebook with Sarah Tellis. It's Kathy Schwanke, Maggie Crandall, Tammy Walker. Thank you guys so much for sharing. It's exciting to see the Facebook page actually just hit 1,000 followers. So appreciate you guys continuing to share and bringing more people over to the page so they can see the post every time an episode is released. Today we have Sarah Parshall Perry. Sarah Perry is the author of Sand in My Sandwich and the co-author of When the Fairy Dust Settles. She has written on topics ranging from disability and family to education and the arts, with appearances at Town Hall, CNS News, Daily Caller, and Christianity Today. Sarah has a law degree from the University of Virginia School of Law and manages coalitions for the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. Today, we're talking about her most recent book, Mommy Needs a Raise, because quitting's not an option. Embedded in this book is a story about her leaving her full-time profession and becoming a full-time mom and how that was really a step of obedience for her. And as a working mom, this topic is so close to my heart. And I know whether you work or you stay at home, these discussions and thoughts and struggles are often top of mind. So I think you guys are really going to be able to identify with this week's episode. So let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Sarah Perry. Well, hey, Sarah, and welcome to Feathers tonight.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
I'm so glad that you're here. How about we start out and you can introduce yourself and your family?
So my name is Sarah Parshall Perry. I am the mother of three and the wife of one who I've been married to for 15 years and grew up in the Midwest. So every so often I'll say a word like restaurant and people will say, oh, you're not from the East Coast, but we live north of Maryland now. And I have sort of taken a traditional path that made me ask some fairly non-traditional questions in my own life. And that was kind of the focus of the book that I recently wrote, which was Mommy Needs a Raise Because Quitting's Not an Option. And that's what I'm looking forward to sharing with all the listeners tonight.
Okay, so I just have to go back to the restaurant comment. I have never heard it pronounced like that. Can you say it one more time?
Restaurant, like there's an O in it. And trust me, I also used to say bubbler when I would come out here to the East Coast.
What is that?
And well, it's a water fountain, apparently, is what everybody else calls it.
Oh, okay.
And sodas are pop. Apparently, that's a thing that's very big in the Midwest as well. But I didn't realize that I had an accent until I went back for my 20th high school reunion. And of course, you know, I'm obviously giving all of your listeners an inclination as to my age. But I went back and I thought, man, you guys sound weird. And then I realized I had sounded like that for the 20 plus years I had lived in the Midwest. So.
Oh, that's so funny. I love that. I haven't ever heard of that. I learn something every day, I guess. So are you in Eastern Maryland?
We are actually north of Baltimore near the Pennsylvania line. And my husband and I like to call it God's country. We are very fortunate in that there's a major interstate that takes us down to Baltimore when we need to get down into the city. But we are very, very north. We are one highway exit away from the wilds of Pennsylvania. So we live in a fairly rural area, and it's mostly agricultural, and the houses are all spread out. The kids have lots of room to run. So we feel very fortunate because my husband likes to joke with me that he loves places where he's got tons of space, and yet he is the most social individual you will ever meet. In fact, just this weekend, we had six people over to our house, and that's a fairly standard weekend. In fact, my husband has perfected the art of answering the door in his pajamas with his flattened slippers, and his hair could be standing in every direction, but he is the kind of guy that welcomes all comers at any time of the day or night. And I am the kind of person who am still getting used to the idea of expanding my boundaries a little bit. So he was the wild extrovert, fly by the seat of his pants kind of a guy. And that's what, as a typical, very uptight, firstborn individual who was hyper overachieving, I was really attracted to that in him. He was the kind of guy that just made life seem very exciting and sort of explosive with opportunity. And it's very romantic when you've come from a very controlled background and you've always done the best thing, you've always done the most appropriate thing, and you meet this guy and he just sweeps you off your feet. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. We met and were engaged within 6 months and married in less than a year. So we are, we're sort of the happily and yet still struggling ever after. So we definitely keep it real.
So you guys are the quintessential opposites attract.
We are the absolute opposite attract story. In fact, he was a country kid, came from a very rural area. We grew up in a suburb of Milwaukee. So everyone thinks Wisconsin and they think it's nothing but cattle. And there are plenty of dairy farms, but you know, Milwaukee's a pretty bustling area. And went to a high school with about 500 in my class. So I was in a decent sized town and was always, you know, going to Chicago to visit my relatives. So think two different types of people. And he showed up to pick me up on our first date, and he was driving a blue Ford Ranger pickup truck. That was a 1985. It was on lifts and it was so loud. I could hear it coming a half mile before he actually got to my apartment. So, I mean, he was in a cowboy hat the first time I met him. He just, you know, it was one of those, I have never seen anything like this human in my life. And to this day, he still cuts a wide swath. People who meet Matt do not often forget that they have met him. And I think my children have taken on a lot of that personality because they too really sort of beat a broad path wherever they go. They're quite memorable.
That's awesome. I'm just sitting here smiling because you guys actually remind me of me and my husband. My husband has a truck and I can hear him coming down the road when he's coming home. And he wore a cowboy hat coming out of the church when we got married.
Oh,
and
I love it.
I'm the type A achiever too. And so you would never, I think a lot of people would never put us together. My mom always says, that is not the guy I imagined you being with.
I got that too.
Growing up.
I got that too. So that was something we heard as well. So it's nice to hear a kindred spirit who has been in the exact same situation, but it definitely works. It's funny how God takes gaps in your personality, areas of your weakness, and give somebody else a strength in that area. And then when you come together and you mesh so perfectly, you realize why the Lord's brought the two of you together. And I think we have this saying that the Lord allowed us to bond very quickly because after we got married, things became very difficult in very short order. And we've seen things in 15 years that some people don't see in a lifetime. We have two boys and a girl, and the boys are on either side. My daughter, Grace, is right in the middle. Noah is my oldest. Jesse is my youngest. And both boys are on the autism spectrum. And I have a very rare autoimmune disease called Behçet's disease. And there are only 15,000 or so of us in the United States with it. I lost my 36-year-old brother to lymphoma 2 years ago. My dad, my husband lost his dad about 2 years after we got married. And within a year, both of our grandparents had died. So we've had our own sort of share of difficulties. And we like to say that God used quick glue, quick cement with the two of us because we were going to have to weather a lot of storms together. And I can definitely say that early bonding that we knew was a result of God putting us in each other's lives at the same time, at the right place, was definitely instrumental in where we are today. And that's, you know, 15 years later. And as my husband says, still got the heat. So that's kind of our motto for life, but it really has more to do with the Lord's faithfulness and the way he's just brought us through a lot of difficulty. And that was really a lot of the story behind my first book. So my first book for Revell was called Sand in My Sandwich and Other Motherhood Messes I'm Learning to Love. And it was the story of giving up control and letting go of that desire to have everything perfectly managed, because life really does not fall in perfect, succinct packages. And everything that I thought I was prepared for, everything I thought I could control and manipulate into acquiescence, never worked out the way I wanted it to. There were things we didn't see coming. You can't prepare for losing a sibling. You can't prepare for an autism diagnosis. You can't prepare for a miscarriage. You can't prepare for the death of a parent. And these things come to you. And that was the Lord's way in my life and in my marriage and in parenting, where I learned in some ways the hard way just to say, Lord, I'm on my knees. You have every support system kicked out from under you, and you find yourself looking up at heaven going, okay, Lord, I give up. This is all I got. I have nothing left. So it means I have to look to you. So that was really the story of dealing with the difficulties you find in motherhood in my first book. And a lot of it centered on our relationship with the boys and how we traversed that journey of dealing with two of them on the spectrum. But Mommy Needs a Raise, my most recent book, was trying to answer the question that I had for a long time, because a few years after I had graduated from law school and I had started as a practicing attorney and had worked as a litigator, I'm doing trial work for commercial litigation, and then took on an in-house position with an advertising agency. We got pregnant with our first, with Noah, and I entered into this decision that I thought in my mind was very practical. And what I said to myself was, well, if I get a raise, if I get even a cost of living increase, I will take that as a sign that I'm valued at work and I will go back to work. Now, this was surprise number one. This was me trying to take something as eternal and long-lasting and valuable as motherhood and distill it down to a very simple calculation of how important is what I'm about to do. Is it more important that I get this raise at work? Will that be this stamp, this, you know, imprimatur of approval where God says, all right, I want you to go back to work? I was not prepared, and nobody can accurately relay this, no matter what kind of giftedness they have with language. No one is accurately prepared for how much you will love your children. That is and was for me one of those first blindsided moments about motherhood. And as I took this question of, do I work or do I stay home with my kids? And is what I'm going to do valuable? Do I have worth if I'm just a lawyer, if I'm just a mother and I'm not a lawyer? That was the first thing God taught me, was this relationship is different than any relationship you will ever have. And one of the reasons it's so important is because it mimics the love that I have for you. Mm-hmm. So that was really a point in my life where I felt like God was beginning to evolve how I saw myself and evolve a different aspect of my personality. So I would learn later to give up some aspects of control, because we would be sort of challenged by these difficulties, both with my son's diagnosis and with all the circumstances surrounding our family. But the first step for me, I really wrote these two books in reverse. This was sort of the prequel to the first book, and it was more of a standalone in that I had lots of girlfriends who were asking this question: is it the right decision to stay home with kids? Now, back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, it was a given that women were going to stay home with their children, and that was sort of the societal norm. Well, that's not as common now as it was before, and we're taught that everything is available to us, and it is immediate, and we can have everything when we want it, and we're not, given any restrictions and the world is our oyster. And what it doesn't take into account is the fact that there are natural limitations on the relationship you will have that is special and unique with your kids. And yes, perhaps God will call you to have a bunch of different experiences, and they will be wonderful. But in my experience, God has said, just not all at the same time. And I look back, and again, God's timing is perfect. So for me to enter into this stupid calculation going, all right, well, I didn't get a raise. And then, of course, I have my son, and I look at him, and I tell my husband, that's it. I'm not going back to work. I can't leave this person for so much as 5 minutes, let alone for an entire life of reentering the workforce. That was the first way I saw of God going, I'm just going to nudge you in this direction because you don't know what I have planned for you. So I'm going to first surprise you. And so much of this is really about being surprised by the value and the worth of motherhood. And I think we all assume motherhood's going to be valuable and worthy. And we know that's the case. But for those of us particularly who've been out in the workforce and then give that up to stay home with our babies, there is sometimes that pang of, am I doing enough as a person? I'm just home with kids. You know, there were days, and Amy, I'm sure you can relate to this. My husband would come back from traveling, and he traveled a lot. So I did spend a lot of time certain early years on where I was by myself and we didn't have any family around. So, you know, I call these our survival periods. And I actually wrote a chapter in the book called Survival Instinct. And it's about those sort of, we just need to make it to the other side moments that no one tells you about with parenting. Mm-hmm. And he would come home and I would be in the exact same clothes he had left and seen me wearing 3 days prior. You know, and I would be the absolute cliche of the sitcom mother, right? So I have unwashed hair and I have toddlers crawling around my feet and the dogs are barking and the house is a mess. And I'm going, what am I doing with my life? I have all of this education and these degrees. Am I doing something that is worthy? I know I have these people that love me and they depend on me, but does this long-term equal the sacrifice that I gave up? And without spoiling it, I think just about everybody knows what the answer to that question is. I was just showed it in some really interesting, really funny ways. And that's what prompted me to write the book.
Mm-hmm. And you have such a great sense of humor to write these essays and share these stories of what you experienced along the way.
Well, I like to tell people that I was either really brave in writing this book or really stupid because I lay it all out there. I have no shame. And that's one of the cool things about being an introvert in writing. It makes you really brave because you're going, I'm going to write this, but you have no concept. Oh, I don't know who's going to read this. So you just put everything out there and we live very transparent lives. In fact, if you were here right now, I mean, Amy and I, you and I joked before this broadcast. I mean, I'm like here in a ponytail, in a nightgown. There you go. All right.
I
am totally classing it up right now. So I say all of the stuff that I think other people think but don't say. And I wanted somebody in Christianity, specifically a mother, to say, oh, just tell me that this is okay, right? Like, I don't have to have everything together. Like, sometimes if I'm just here with them, that's okay, right? And that was one of the lessons I learned. And I would have shared that with other people because there are lots of books on how to parent. And I'm very clear about, listen, I'm not going to tell you how to parent in this book because I could write a book on everything I have screwed up over the course of 11 odd years of parenting. I'm going to tell you how I've learned from my mistakes and how these fabulous surprises and these moments of hilarious undoing helps me realize exactly the value of what I'm doing is this job phase of my life, which was being a mom.
Mm-hmm. And we appreciate it so much. Yeah. So I'm sitting in my onesie with my with my newly washed hair. So
yes.
I think everybody appreciates knowing not everything is pristine and perfect, even though we would all like to be. So you clearly made the jump from you had your baby and you went home. So as you've gone, stay-at-home mom, you're writing too, we have to say that. But what do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions about being a stay-at-home mom?
Oh my gosh, that it's easy. In fact, I like to tell people that if God would sit me down and just negotiate with me with workload, I would take the bar exam again. And let me tell you, that's 2 days of 16 hours of testing. I'd take it again if I could make my day-to-day existences easier. Sometimes you just get to the other end of the day and you're like, thank God, everyone's alive. And they all got fed and I got them back to bed. And the earth has rotated and we're all still here. So I really think people who don't have experience being parents think that it is just sort of this, you know, a TV and we're really not. It is so much more complex and it's so much more involved. And then you think, well, if I could just get to the point where they're sleeping through the night, okay, if they're just, once they're walking and I don't have to carry them anywhere, then it'll be easier. Once they're potty trained, then it'll be easier. Once they can feed themselves. And then you find as they get older and older, and now they're preteens in my house, my oldest is almost 12, you realize, oh man, it doesn't get easier. The difficulty just metamorphosizes. That's exactly
just shifts. Because just then, like, see, my oldest is 13 and she has her first boyfriend. So then we're staring down, you know, driving a car, and then you're, you know, looking at high school and colleges, and oh my gosh, just changes.
Yes, it
just
does. Yes, it does. So I think the level of intensity and the level of difficulty are major misconceptions of stay-at-home moms. I think that's definitely a part of it. And I think also that we don't struggle with our worth outside motherhood. I think particularly for those of us who worked outside the home before we had kids. And I have a lot of friends who are in very similar situations. One of my good girlfriends is a dentist. And so she spent time in medical school and then gave that up so she could stay home with her kids. I have friends who were nurses, friends who are teachers, and all of them have done the same thing where they felt the Lord's calling to give that up to be home with their kids. But I think there is, even though there are not every mother is discussing this, I think it is a common phase to go through the, is this worth it? Am I going to ever get it back? Am I going to use the thing that I gave up? Is God ever going to bless my initial effort in the pre-child era? And am I ever going to use it again? Is this, you know, something that's going to be permanent, or have I lost everything I worked so hard to get? And what I discovered, and this was really for me one of the most beautiful conclusions I came to in all of this, was that the Lord in his perfect timing has a very large pause button. And I have been blown away by the way I've had a chance to look at other women's lives and see how God has taken the gifting and the skill set that they have had and used it not only after their kids have gotten bigger, but even in their own houses. You know, the parent who is the teacher, the mom who is the teacher that I know, her kids have fabulous summer bridge activities, and she has a mini classroom set downstairs in her playroom. And I have another friend that's a nurse, and her husband was struggling with cancer, and she was an absolutely fabulous medical advocate for him. And all of these mothers who study different things, God does not waste any of that. And he's very good about the way he builds upon things. And so what starts out as a very simplistic timeline becomes very complex, and it becomes multidimensional. And he weaves in experiences that you think could never possibly be related and won't ever possibly be blessed again. And he gives them back to you tenfold because he is so generous like that.
Oh man, that is so good to hear. I'm actually still on the other side. I'm still working full time. I'm a developer for a bank, and I have said, since, you know, you talk about that love when you have your first child. It's actually a joke in my family. They were not sure I'd be able to take care of kids because I just was not very into kids.
Right.
Just very not nurturing. And then I had, my mom and my sister were very scared for me. They were like, your sister going to have to move in with you to help you take care of these kids?
There's and, a vote of confidence for you.
Yeah, I know, right? They didn't tell me this till about a year ago.
Oh, my gosh.
So then I had my first one. And just like you said, it's like something flips in your body and your brain and everything, totally head over heels, totally nurturing, all of that. And ever since then, I went back to work 7 weeks after she was born, and I just bawled my eyes out. But I've been working since. And, you know, for me, it's been, you know, God has asked me to stay working for now.
Right.
And so I have always, and I will tell the people at work, I'm not saying anything that they don't know. You know, they know I would love to stay home. But it's just not where I am right now. So what I'm curious about is, what do you say to people like me that are still working mothers? And how can you encourage working mothers when they're kind of looking down the road? They would love to do that. That's just not where they are right now.
You know, that's so great that you brought that up, because one of the chapters is called Play Nice. And I discuss the omnipresent mommy war in this book, because I hadn't seen anybody writing anything about this from a Christian perspective. And just because we're Christians doesn't mean we are not prone to the same things. I have a theory. So all women have opinions. And then women who have children suddenly have opinions about the best way to raise children. And so you take that one thing that you have in common with every other mother in the world, which is the fact that you have a child, and there are a million different perspectives, and we all think they're right. So it makes that one thing about which we are most passionate, the most fiery conviction that we have. And so it's hard not to feel like, okay, this is the way I'm doing it. So clearly this has got to be the best way. So I talk about all of that in the book. I talk about stay-at-home moms versus working moms. I talk about home births or hospital, breastfeeding or bottle feeding. And there are so many iterations of this, but I really wanted to talk specifically to that working mom who wants to stay home with her kids. In fact, you guys, in a lot of ways, have it so much harder because you put in a full work day and then you come home. And let me tell you, there is no child that is going to run to get your slippers and the newspaper so you can just sit down and relax. You come in and you're never actually off the clock. You are on the clock at work, and then you come home and you're on the clock at home. And I have just now started to put my foot back in the workforce. So I manage coalitions and partnerships down for the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. And on the 2 days a week that I go to D.C. and I come home, I am bombarded. And let me tell you, I love it because it shows I'm missed. But I also think, oh, thank you, dear God in heaven, that you love me enough that I am able to stay here for a little bit of time, because you know this girl is just not at a point where she can physically manage 5 days in an office. I am just too
thank
tired.
Goodness. I work from home. I work from home like 90% of the time. I am so thankful I do not have to go actually to an office.
Yes,
so
that makes a huge
thankful
difference.
For that.
But you
yeah,
know what?
It does.
I think the Lord really, He understands our circumstances. I love the fact that God is that God who is all-knowing and all-seeing. And the Bible is very clear about Him knowing what's on our hearts before we even utter the cry. And He knows your heart, and He knows the heart of the mom down the street who may be struggling with the same thing. But He also knows what's required of us at the time. And He does not call us to things that He does not believe we are capable of doing. And that was part of my desire, was to break down the segregations we put ourselves in terms of the different preferences and the different stands we were taking on motherhood, because motherhood's so important. I can't think of any reason not to do anything other than high five each other and tell every other mom you meet, you're doing a great job. Because it's so hard when you get up in the morning, and if you're just pouring a bowl of cereal, it's good job, mom. Because you know what? You are showing up, and that is that is really, I've discovered 90% of the equation is
that's huge.
Being
really
their
is.
Person. That's it. That's really it. I mean, you are, if you think about the importance of motherhood, it is the starting place. So it's fairly fabulous that God has allowed women to be the vessel, an actual structure that carries and feeds another person. I mean, you want to talk about cool. He could have picked any other way. It could have been like space egg transport, but he used us and he used our bodies and he used the way we're constructed. And there is no relationship like that between a mother and a child. And I think we as Christians, especially, who know that we are all loved and we are all so precious to him because he talks about us as his children, we of all people should understand what a precious relationship that is. And so as much as we're able, I think we really need to encourage one another. And maybe it's the mom down the street who has to work. Maybe it's, listen, I'm at home with my kids. Can I help you? Do you want to drop off your kids for the day? Can I take them on a play date? Can I take them for ice cream? Something to help. I wish I saw, and I'm really praying that this is the case as we move forward, you know, in this very new era socially. I'm praying we seek out other moms in the church and among our friends, and we just say, how can I come alongside you and help you? Because it's a beautiful journey, but I mean, it is a challenging journey. It is a lot of hills and a lot of valleys and a lot of rocky patches, but nothing worth doing is ever easy. It never is. Anything that comes easy is never going to be as valuable as something that requires a lot of investment.
Absolutely. My dad always said that. So, Sarah, what do you say as you journey in this motherhood, where do you think, what kind of place do you think faith and obedience plays in motherhood?
Well, for me, it was obedience to the calling of staying home. So we were just talking about how, you know, God's called you to continue to work. And that was very hard. I could not possibly conceive. And this was a longstanding dialogue between my husband and I. Why did he call me to law school and then call me to stay home with my kids? What mm-hmm. am I possibly doing? Did I mishear him? And that was a question I asked a ton. God, did I hear you wrong? And I once heard Beth Moore say something that was totally, it was like one of those seismic vibrations where you go, oh, wow, did this speak a good word into my life? She said once, if there is one iota of your heart that seeks the Lord's will, you will not miss it. He is not a frustrator. He is not a discourager. He does not want to hide from you. He does not want to make it difficult on you. If your heart seeks him, even in the smallest way, he will reward that by revealing to you what he's called you to do. And I really wanted to write. That was my desire. In fact, I fought very long with the concept of, do I go to journalism school, because my undergrad was in journalism, or do I go to law school? And I went to law school in part, and I'm going to be just real transparent with you here, because I just wanted to prove I could do it and get through it and pass the bar exam. And then I practiced law and I did it for 6 years and I thought, okay, I like it, but I'm not like super in love with it. I really want to write. Well, little did I know, God was going to give all of that super boring writing with lots of Latin for 50 pages and 25 footnotes. He was going to take that and he was going to turn it through the experiences I had with the kids with whom and for whom I was staying home and turn it into these books. It was such a perfect conclusion. And I know the story is not done, but at this chapter in my life, I can look back in retrospect and say, all right, after almost 12 years of being a parent, now I'm, you know, slapping my forehead going, how could I possibly ever have anticipated it would have turned out like this? So for me, ironically, the obedience was staying home because I knew I was madly in love, but I also from the start struggled with, oh man, what am I going to do with all this education? And then I went through a very difficult phase of doubting what he had laid on my heart and not trusting him to redeem it. I thought, all right, well, that's it. I'm giving it up permanently. It's going to be a waste. And now I look at what I'm doing in my work for FRC in Washington and the books that I've written. And I have just been able to use that experience tenfold so he doesn't waste it. And that was a huge revelation for me, that being obedient to the call and being obedient to what I knew he had promised me. And he really does desire to fulfill those heart longings that we have. And he's not a frustrator. It's just not in his nature to want to block us from the things that we desire and the things that we feel called to. So that, you know, in a strange way, so many women I know I've talked to, oh, I knew I was going to stay home with the kids. And I knew it too, but it was that I have to be obedient to stay home as opposed to just going ahead and doing it because I felt immediately called, because I would say I had a conflicted calling. I knew it was right to do, but I really struggled with what I was giving up. And that was a form of faithlessness on my part because I didn't trust the Lord at the time to redeem all of this stuff that had gone into it. So that was kind of a hard lesson, but a beautiful lesson, because the Lord used these very high energy, incredibly unique, really labor intensive children to go, you know, all that work you did with negotiating, you know, contracts and negotiating settlements every day. You're going to be looking at a small Attila the Hun, and you're going to have to use that. You just don't know you're going to have to use.
Oh, I have one of those. Oh, my gosh. I was just literally just hours ago talking about, it's like negotiations.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
All the time.
It's bedtime and everything.
At least you've been trained in it. I haven't been.
Well, who knows? It'll get to the point. Probably, well, you'll have to teach them how to balance a checking account, and then you'll be more used than I am. So.
Oh, my goodness. That's so funny. Well, I have been so encouraged, and I love that perspective that God works it all in his timing. He redeems it. He knows what we need at the moment. Yeah, that's just, I needed to hear that myself. So I'm sure the listeners, the ones that are listening, are encouraged too.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. I really have loved the fact that I came back to one essential conclusion, was that this job of motherhood is the best job I've ever had. And I've had a lot, and I've taken some strange twists and turns, and I came up with these sort of half-baked work from home schemes, and I did everything from day trading online. What a joke, you know, like I was just going to pick that up. You know, I bought a book by Warren Buffett, and suddenly it was like, day trading, this is fabulous.
Oh,
you know, when you're anxious, by the way, and you're netting about 50 cents a day, is a good way to grow an ulcer. So it wasn't doing anybody any good. It was just making me anxious. So yeah, it was everything from that to, okay, I'm going to teach as an adjunct professor at a local college and loved it, but also did not realize that was my life's calling. And it just, for me, came back to, I've had all of these jobs with this education, and for me, everything comes down to loving motherhood and knowing this is the best job that I've ever had. And the dividends and the rewards of motherhood, and you know this, Amy, being a mom, they are absolutely innumerable. They are the kind of payment that lasts a long time, and it is minimal in the beginning, but it grows and appreciates continually, and it is payment in riches beyond anything we could ever anticipate. And that was the great conclusion in the end.
So good. All right, Sarah. Well, thanks so much for sharing today. I hope everybody goes and gets the book. It's hilarious. So
thank you.
And your Facebook, I enjoy your Facebook page. You have, you really do have such a great sense of humor.
Well, thank you. You know, like I said, I'm either braver or a little more stupid than most, because everything that falls apart and explodes and gets messy at my house, I'm willing to put out there for everybody else to read. So hopefully everyone will get a kick out of it.
Yep. All right. So if people want to find you or find the book, where do they go?
They can go anywhere books are sold, from Baker Books to Amazon to Barnes & Noble to ChristianBook.com. The book is Mommy Needs a Raise, because quitting's not an option. And I'm on Facebook at Sarah Perry Author and on Twitter at Sarah P. Perry.
All right. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. Talk to you soon.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Sarah. There's a couple things that I want to take from this episode. And the very first is that God just doesn't waste anything. I was so encouraged by that word from Sarah, is that God is working all things together for His good. No matter what we are going through, whether it is our education or our work or our parenting, whatever it is, if we are following God and we are obeying Him, we can be just rest assured that God is not going to waste anything. And we can trust Him. We can have faith that that is His plan and that He is going to work it together for His good. And it is not going to be wasted. When we're following Him, it will not be wasted. The second thing that I want to take away from this episode is just the reminder to encourage one another. You know, life is just hard enough to have faith in what God is doing in our lives and to obey, but judgment from other believers especially makes it even more difficult. So I just want to, I'm encouraged myself and encourage you to just encourage the people around you and that we can help each other out and we can become really that body of Christ that God calls us to, that we are not all living the same life. We're not all called to the same things. We don't all have the same gifts and talents and paths that we are taking. But when we come together, we are the strongest. And when we can encourage each other, that can happen the best. So let's encourage each other and lift each other up. All right, guys, thank you again so much for listening this week. Just a reminder to go over to Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, wherever you go to share links, that you would share those and comment over on iTunes with a review and a comment. Would appreciate that too. So, guys, we will see you next time on Feathers.